Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You have found the Shanty Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanty Pants Show.
Thank you, Jessica, so much for joining me today on the Shanty Pants Show. I am super excited to have you here.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thanks for asking me.
You are welcome. And why don't you do a brief kind of intro on who you are today for the audience?
Sure. I am a musical artist, a singer-songwriter. I play fiddle. I'm an author. I put out my first book, a memoir, last year. I'm a speaker advocate. I'm in my early 30s and I've been through a lot. So I share my story and just try to make the most meaningful, positive that I can make out of what for a while was a pretty dark situation. So, I mean, that's like a nutshell.
Yes.
That's
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So
we'll get into the real stuff. Yeah.
Long story.
I'm just so happy. I'm happy that you are where you are today. And I know how I kind of found out and stumbled upon you was I'm in the very like cult world and doing a lot of research on cult dynamics and interviewing a lot of cult survivors, which leads into a lot of other kinds of abuse besides just a religious abuse, which is a lot of what I do. Not that all cults are religious, but that's kind of what led me to seeing you or finding out about you. I really don't even know how I stumbled upon your book, probably because I listen to a lot of books. So I think it came up on Amazon as like a recommendation of because I read all books about trauma and abuse and terrible things. So probably that's why your book popped up. Oh, yay. Yeah. Here, read this one.
And you know Sarah Edmondson?
Yes.
Okay. Because I had an interview as well with her Nippy not too long.
Yeah. And that's a, you know, we definitely will put your book link in the show notes and make sure people know about the book. But that is how when I contacted you, I was literally sitting right in this, and this is my little office space. And I have a door over here. It's just this big plywood door, and my husband covered it in canvas for me. And so I'll call it my like therapy paint wall.
Okay.
So sometimes when I'm listening to a book or music or whatever, I'll just let my feelings paint. So I was doing that as I was finishing your book, and I'm like sobbing.
Wow.
I was sitting on the floor right here as I was messaging you on Instagram right when I finished it. And then I was listening to all your music and I'm just like, oh my gosh. Amazing. Yeah. Like everyone has to read this book. And I think you, like you said before I started recording, it's not a fun, beachy, easy read.
No.
It is. It's an easy read. It's not, but not mentally or emotionally. It is very deep. It's very dark. I mean, it is very, but it's also, I couldn't put it down. Like, you did a fantastic job of writing the book. Like, I was blown away. And for a first time author, I'm just like, oh my gosh. Cause I listened to a ton of books. So I was very impressed by that. And it was awful.
To the audiobook, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So,
I mean, this was my first book. This was my first time certainly recording a book, reading that. So the writing of it was so therapeutic and cathartic. And then reading it aloud, that was all over again. And yeah, so the story in a nutshell is like my history, like my growth. My book is called Unspeakable. And it's basically, although I was, there were a few years where I was on TV and performing, and there was this outward picture, you thought you knew what the story was. But my memoir is basically everything that I wasn't saying throughout that time. And my dad was really abusive in so many ways. He was sexually abusive. And that goes all the way back to my earliest memories. Oldest of 12 kids, we were in a family band. And I was kind of stuck in what became a sort of mini cult, a high control group, until I was in my early 20s. And so like the first third-ish of the book is just my growing up years, kind of getting to the point where there was a public story. And of course, that's where the story starts. That was then, you know, 18 years in. And then kind of the behind the scenes of that time. And then trying to get out, and, you know, how long that kind of took. And you know, the last bit of the book, maybe the last third, last quarter, is just some of the therapy that I got the opportunity to do and chose to do, and the wonderful support that I've had. And, you know, just trying to come back and reclaim a story that included so many things that I didn't choose, and so many things that I'll be trying to make sense of and work through for the rest of my life. But it was really empowering for me. I basically had two choices. Like, if I had the chance to maybe push a button and like erase all of the trauma, and like, I feel like that's a moral obligation. Like, you would never knowingly choose that, or it's just always going to be wrong. You know, like abuse to a child, like it's wrong. Like, there are other ways to have challenges and grow. And so, but I, of course, don't have that choice, and no one does. Whatever that we've been through, especially when we're children, we're so dependent, and there's very little that we can do. And at some point, if we can have the chance to come into our own, these are the cards we've been handed. How are we going to play them? And for me, between music and performing on stage and telling a story, I either felt like I needed to run to the other side of the world, keep my head down, and just try to survive and never confront any of those things. Or it was going to be such an uphill climb just to start telling a different story to myself, to the people, me, and then eventually, what was I going to say to the world publicly on record? And I felt, you know, a weight of conscience to try to live more honestly. And you start to see how your individual story is where it fits in a larger categories. And, you know, certainly not the only child who was ever abused. I'm not the only person that was trying to get out of a situation, hard situation. And, you know, we've already kind of mentioned cults a few times. And, you know, that was something that for me wasn't immediate. I didn't start applying some of that vocabulary or patterns to my upbringing. But when I did, it was really helpful, and it made sense. And, you know, that for us, that was basically based on a fundamentalist religion that Dad just kind of took further and further to his own little dark space, was you know, that was probably the element that made it most hard to get out. Even though I, you know, most people would think, oh, a 23-year-old, they're their own person. You know, that there's a lot of usually tools and identity and all at that point, and not really for me. So last 5-6 years have been just a lot of change, and in a lot of ways feel like a second life for me. So maybe that wasn't the real version, but that was like 5-minute version.
Is definitely, that's a perfect, it's a perfect synopsis of the book, you know. And I think it brings up, I'm starting to think about all the things in the book that I was, you know, like so drawn to. But you did, even aside from the abuse, it's just so sad to me, because I'm like, you really had such an amazing life, you know, like, and for the people on the outside, it's like, oh, that, what an adventure. Like, you got to live here and you got to move here and you got to travel here. And we talked about you being on America's Got Talent, you know, you got to do all these cool things. Mm-hmm. And yet that's what the rest of the world sees, right? And it looks so fabulous and shiny and wonderful. And I know one thing that I was thinking about, I had my husband watch some YouTube clips on just who you were. He's like, who is she? So we were looking at YouTube clips. Well, I just put your name in on YouTube. Well, it brought up really old clips from your past, which I can imagine is hard. But I was sitting there, I was like, the fury inside my body, I was like, okay, this is past, she's out now. But I, after reading the book and watching, it was like an interview with you and your older, the older siblings and your parents. And I'm just like looking at your parents, and I'm
Club one.
Was it what?
Is it the 700 Club one where we're all sitting in a row in chairs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just a couple weeks before I left. That was like one of the latest interviews that I.
That makes sense.
And I feel if that's the one we're thinking of, because there's ones from when I'm a teen, and we're talking about, you know, performing, or, you know, and I feel like you can sometimes I look at that and I go, you can't tell.
Yeah.
It's fine. But I feel like some of the ones towards the end, there's kind of this, whoa, something's off. You start seeing the facade is starting to like melt away, and I couldn't keep it up. That dark time. Yeah. And it's so hard to even some days, I think I've accepted it, and then I'll be like, even happen, you know, like the denial, it's so disorienting. And I think, you know, being on TV and performing, these things will live on the internet forever. So it's like strangely preserved. And so I know exactly when I'm going to encounter that and in what context. I don't know. Did you watch Shiny Happy People?
Oh my gosh, yes.
There is this really quick flash where it shows my family. And like, I didn't know that was going to be there. It's like showing all these other families for like a second. This show. And I was like, have you seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Oh, the meme of Leonardo DiCaprio being like, and just so weird. So you never know when that.
Wow, yeah.
Or when people are going to remember that version of the story and that chapter. It's wild, because a lot of people didn't, you know, it was this flash. It was this, one of those big, reality. So what's going on now? You still perform? And it's like, things have changed. You know, I never know what to say. I'm like, Google it or don't. I don't know.
I know. Well, and it's so hard too. And that's what I truly loved about your book. Even if you were to Google it, you're not really going to get the whole story. I mean, you know, your stories, and obviously it's your story. It's not your sibling's story. This is your story. And I think, you could Google it, you can do whatever, but you're still, I could see how you could run into people that are just like, oh my gosh, I remember you from TV. How's life? That maybe have no clue. what has happened in the last several years.
Right.
And, you know, they're just clueless and not meaning anything bad about it. But I imagine, yeah, you have triggers all the time that show up.
Yeah.
Many different forms.
Yeah. And I think to that point as well, I really did try. I think it's really tough. I think when you are talking about especially stuff that happens in groups, in families, there's a lot of people involved. And I think it's tough to balance. I mean, I care about my family and I don't want to do anything to hurt them. And I think, generally speaking, hopefully we can, as humans, be in a place where we don't want to hurt anyone. But you feel loyalty and commitment to like the people that you know and that you love. And that should never be weaponized to try to control or coerce or harm someone. And when abuse is happening within a family, that's exactly what's happening. And so you have this choice of, or the struggle of, how do I maintain honesty and health and boundaries and all of this and speak truth and not, and like respect other people and not make it some sort of war where people have to choose sides. And so, you know, trying to figure out what to say, what not to say. I wrote almost twice the size of the book that, and then it was a really concentrated effort to, for me to write it had its own purpose. It was a process. It was so good for me and hard and challenging and all that together. Choosing what to release was kind of a different consideration, you know, and I've been helped so much by hearing other people's stories. We were talking about feeling like we're not alone, learning that we're not alone, and how that can feel so supportive and so educational and like just so important. It's obviously a huge part of sharing why someone would share one story. It was a motivation for me. And like I read Educated by Tara Westover and I was so inspired and respected her, I think her honesty, her skill in trying to tell her story, but acknowledging this is a family. These things happen. There were other people involved. You can't just, for me, also being on television, there's no point in me changing people's names. You know, like it's, and the choices for our family to be public were not made by me or my siblings. Like we didn't choose that. It's the road our father put us on. And, you know, that cat is out of the bag. You can't go backwards on that one. And more people, even if they're not on reality TV, I think with social media now, so many people, you know, it isn't this really unique situation anymore where, you know, not everybody has 10 years of their life on the internet, but like, yeah, now everybody kind of does.
Yeah, right. Right. And if you would have had that same dynamic back when there were more social media and stuff, you would have been all over the place. You know, you would have been on every single platform. And so, well, I mean, you probably still are, but as far as your little family group was, yeah. But yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. So to that point, while I was writing the book, I went back through my family band, the Willis Clan's Instagram, and it was helpful because at some point, I mean, my first therapy session when I got out, like, let's try to create a narrative, not narrative, but like a timeline. Everything's pulled in your head. Like, let's try to make sense of this for your own person. Like, nobody else is involved. This is not about a book. This is about, you don't even know what you just went through. Like, there's
right
processing. Let's just try to make an order, almost like a list, you know? And eventually when I was writing the book, I was like, I can get really detailed with this timeline because look, we were here on this day and here's
what
I was wearing. And then it was like so helpful and hard to have something to plot through and make a timeline. And it really helped me pull things together. And it helped me be really accurate.
Mm.
Me to
I bet
validate you know, what I couldn't process at the time. It was like, oh, we were on stage that day. And then the next day I had a black eye, you know, and it was like those things, all those happy things that you're talking about, like,
right.
Sewing the two stories together, sewing, you know, mixing and intertwining in the way that it was, you know, the true reality of the situation. That was
right
for me to even see, because I lived it, but I hadn't been able
to
make sense of it at the time.
Yeah, that actually does make sense, though, where that, as hard as it is, it can be very valuable to kind of see your history lined right out there. And be able to kind of, because even like the things, like you talk about therapy and what you were wearing in certain times, and so many of our memories, like it could be a smell, it could be a visual thing. So to be able to kind of go through and get some of those, you know, even if they're triggering some of these outfits or moments that spark something, is good, because it's bringing it up and then you're able to process it now at a place you are now.
Yeah.
So that's really good. And I was, so back to the YouTube video, you were talking, it had to have been the one you were talking about that was at the end time, because the whole time, I mean, not the whole time, it was like 6 minutes long, maybe.
Okay.
I'm looking at your face. You were sitting on the end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's not okay. She's not okay. She's not okay. Stop the interview right now. And I could just tell. And so that's so interesting that you say that that was towards the end, because that totally makes sense. Because I'm like,
I got in trouble. It was like, you ruined that interview. And so it kind of cut around. They didn't show me. And if you notice, I'm only in it a little bit. And like, I think there's a shot in it where you can see, like, I have my hands under my legs and I'm just like, oh my God. You know, listening to what my dad said. He's like talking about that he's talking about.
Yes.
How to raise children. And it was so infuriating. So that would have been after the incident in where dad like attacked me on the bus. My brother had gotten involved in that other time, and just all these confrontations. That was like the dark age time. I wasn't able to talk to my now husband at that time, and kind of that house arrest time. But it's time to perform, you know, it's been or sing a song, or you know, smile and look. And I was like, I can't do it anymore. So
that is so, yeah. And I mean, it was very, to me, very apparent that, and obviously to them, because you got in trouble for it, but that you were not okay, you know? And so let's just talk a little bit about that, since we're on that subject. So this was kind of like at the end when you were, and of course I've read the book, so I kind of know, but when you were having, is this like when your boyfriend at the time was like revealing things like, is something going on?
So,
and you were starting to realize this isn't normal, not every family's like this?
So, okay. So in general, maybe that last part, the, oh, not every family is like this part. You know, my abuse started so young that I wasn't terrified. I was confused. I didn't, like, I don't have a name for that body part. I haven't had this experience, but you could say that about every day of a 3 or 4 year old's life, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't until roughly, maybe I was more like 8 or 9, that dad did something different. Sexually abusive that created a really traumatic physical reaction. I just wanted to be outside of my body. I wanted that to never happen again, like that sort of thing. So from the time I was about 9 to in my kind of late teens, like 16, 17, there was, you know, different escalating bad behaviors. And like at 9 years old, I knew like this isn't right. And part of it was because my body was telling me, like, this is a horrible experience for me. But I'm also getting older, and we were a church-going family at that time. We eventually had, like, a home church. But it was like, this clearly isn't right. Like, this is wrong. This is bad. But it also had been happening for years, and it's very complicated. I I hesitate sometimes to say certain details out of context because it's like, oh, but this and this. And like, generally speaking, my mom had a suspicion and kind of an initial knowing at that point because she asked me if something was going on. I said yes, nodded, but I did not elaborate. She did not ask follow-up questions. You know, the conversation wasn't really there from either side. And at that point, I had already... The thing was that it, you know, it's gradual. And this happens a lot of times. Like, this is just a pattern that you see, whether it's kind of your standard grooming escalation of behaviors over time. So I was experiencing that. So around 9, it was like, this isn't right. But a lot of normalizing and a lot of denial and a lot of surviving and saying, this is the system that I'm in. I can't get away from it. And then being so public and being on, you know, kind of being held up in front of other people, like, and my dad telling people, this is how you should raise your children. And we have right ideals for life and this whole philosophy and this whole worldview and him just kind of having this megaphone. There's this gap between, obviously it's not okay because he isn't, there's all these hidden things between what we're presenting to other people. And so that also is just wrong in and of itself. Hypocrisy, it's lying, all those things. So there is that understanding eventually, but it really wasn't until I was all the way out that I could start facing just how bad it really was. And my relationship with my now husband was really, you know, I'd still be there probably, you know. We don't know exactly how the story would go, and there's probably hundreds of different ways it could have gone, but that our relationship was so instrumental in me eventually getting out. And it's a long story, but some of the highlights: he was working at an experiential therapy retreat when we met. He has some stuff in his childhood, some confusing experiences, stuff that he hadn't really ever worked through much until he was working at that place. He's not a therapist. He's on the hospital side. But that meant that when we met, everything seemed fine at first, but when he started encountering, well, this is a little strange, this dad's controlling, or they have these teachings, or I'm sensing weird that, you know, he would, hey, you're just asking for a friend, to the literal expert next to him. And then it seems like this, or maybe you should read this book, or how about you mess up? And so I did start getting these breadcrumbs of, you know, a little bit of an outside perspective. And I think a big part of the cultiness of our family was, or the high control group was, you know, it ended up being, I was in my early 20s. I didn't have my own phone. I wasn't allowed to be alone with other people without my parents' approval or knowing where I was. Books, movies, all these different things had been, you know, selected and sheltered and, you know, screened my whole life growing up. And so I wasn't, the idea, it just wasn't allowed. It wasn't okay. And the way the world did it was just wrong. And the
course,
way
I
wanted to do it was right. And my husband's dad was in music, and that's how our paths had crossed. And so I was allowed to, he came to our house with his family and our, you know, he'd come to shows, and it was kind of like, okay, but don't get your heart involved. You're not allowed to talk to this, you know, you can't really build everything that you need to build an actual relationship, privacy, you know, autonomy, one of those things. I never heard the word autonomy. Like, at some point it was, seems like you don't have any autonomy here. So what's that? I clearly don't have that.
Maybe I don't.
Yeah. And so at some point, as had happened with anybody else that I'd ever been interested in, you know, a period of, well, you can kind of get to know them, but it has to be on our turf according to our rules thing. And then at some point dad finds something to not be okay with. And then that connection gets cut off. You're not allowed to talk to him. You're not, you know, and sometimes in the past it was like, that person shows up, I'm going to shoot him. And I was like, you know, and like,
yeah,
that threat hangs heavy when my dad said, I didn't need to have seen him do that to fear, you know, a threat like that.
Yeah. To know that it's possible.
And so, at some point, I hit that with Sean, my husband, But I kept talking to him secretly. And so I didn't have my own phone, but it would be like, I would borrow someone's phone. I would borrow, you know, we had iPads and email addresses. And so I'd kind of like use that to message him, like text him, way more than I was allowed, because I was technically allowed like one email per week. Sort of, and like,
oh my gosh.
Never kept rules. I was so bad.
right. So rebellious.
Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, you secretly keep in touch with the handsome dude that you like over a whole summer, and it just escalated. And anyway, that was found out in a terrible way. And so I was told to like break up with him. But we weren't dating. We were allowed to go out one time, really, with his parents. Two times, maybe. And that's kind of that dark age section where it was like, but this has happened so many times before. Like, just get back in line and keep doing the little dance. It was like, I can't. I was starting to, again, I think through Sean's eyes and the little outside influence that I was trying to maintain, just how bad things were inside. And you know, there's a reason why we cover our eyes and we're scared, and like, and we only, you know, it's hard to take when the scary thing is right there to like look it in the face. And that's those months were. And it was still about, that was kind of like October, November, so like there were still 4-ish months that I was with my family. And it became very violent. It became just a struggle every day. And it's interesting because it's not 4 months of this in daily danger, but in a much more subtle, echoey sort of way. There's this pattern of a lot of times it does get worse before it gets better. Like, you know, even just in little emotional things where you're like, oh, I thought I worked through that, or okay, great, that's in a much healthier place. Here comes the next thing, raising its line. My time to be worked on, and it's through. You know, you got to lean into those things. And I trust that process. It doesn't mean it's any easier, but at least I can acknowledge, like, and that was the most extreme period of my life. But it got a lot worse before it got better. to just face what it was, because if what you're doing is not admitting the problem, you have to admit the problem, you have to face it, you have to learn about it. All of those things have to happen before you can start working on it. That's what works.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and it's so nice for you that you had that, like, your boyfriend at the time, like you were saying, where he worked and stuff. You had this experience right in front of you to be able to kind of jump into, or at least have someone there with knowledge that could kind of point you in the right direction.
It's totally insane. You look at the story and you're just like, what are the odds? You know how when you're watching some movie and it's like, well, that's not believable because what are the odds that it was or that she walked in and he happened to work there, or they ran into each other at the airport, bumped, oops, spilled my coffee. Like, no, you look at it and you're like, wow, that's how that worked. That's how we got here to where we are now. And I think too, it's interesting at some point for me to realize it. Oh, I kind of had to say things were so much worse than I ever admitted to myself. And at the same time, I've had so many experiences of going, I had a freaking privileged life in a lot of ways. So many people that have all the bad experiences that I had, none of the good ones. And so there was a lot of beauty mixed in, and that's interesting to try to kind of hold space for and make sense of. And then the support part is like, there are so many people that go out of the frying pan and into the fire. And I wouldn't have known. I just jumped. I went to stay eventually with people that I didn't know. I had a cousin that gave me a place to stay for a short while. And then I moved in with my now in-laws. And I had met these people basically a handful of times from my family. And, you know, these could have been, the point is, like, I've learned is when you're in occult, an abusive situation, domestic violence, like your odds of being caught in those places go up astronomically. And like I live in with a really good therapist. Not all therapists are created equal.
Right.
I was in a very safe place. I was with people that, although they weren't experts themselves, knew experts and were not afraid of leaning on professional care. And I was engaged that way. And then the whole thing with my actual situation, my dad, the investigation, my dad is in prison and we for up to 40 years. And I mean, he's going to be in his late 80s if he ever gets out. And I know that I have the majority of the rest of his life and or my life where I don't have to worry about him showing up and trying to reinsert himself in my life or exert power, anything like that. And that is not the norm. There are so many people, I know so people who have told me their stories, and part of their story is, and that person is still walking around out there, offending or not, or and just a different reality than the one I live in. And so I think that's a big part of just the privilege and the support. And I don't want to discount any choices or good steps that I've made. But so when people are kind of like, well, how, you know, how do we stop it? How do we change? How do we reverse engineer like your choices? And like, I don't know how much of that is useful. I think sharing our story is useful. And I have gotten inspiration and educating other people's stories. It's just every situation is so complicated and so different that I don't think that it's always like, well, that was the right solution here. Let's apply it over here. It's like, that may be the right, I don't know if that makes sense. Kind of.
No, it does. Because every situation is completely different. But I find that that other survivors I've talked to as well, and as well as myself, but like, we'll discount our own abuse because other people have had it worse.
Yeah. And I totally get that. And I experience that. I do. It's pretty frequent that I'll have someone will be talking and they'll at some point early on slip in, well, it's nothing compared to what you've been through. And I'm just like, don't. And occasionally I either feel the urge to say that or say that, but then I try to, you know, that serves no one. Like, hearing, oh, who has it worse? And like, that doesn't make sense for us to do. And I ended up going to that experiential therapy retreat where my husband had worked after the fact, like years later. And I think one of the big things that I took away from there was just, you know, it's not about what makes us different and, well, I don't have the same story as you, so, you know, you'll never really understand. And like, that really polarizing, make us feel lonely, can just, you know, the world, that's a darker way to work to get it, when instead thinking that it doesn't, you know, for all the vast variety of people's personalities, their stories, their way of being human, we're all just trying to figure out how to be human and be happy and healthy and like all of these things. We all have that in common. We all experience pain and struggle. And the ways that that happens very much matters. It just doesn't matter in a way that keeps us apart. It's what brings us together. Like, we're all going to have these moments where we're at our worst, we're at our lowest. And instead of those, because a lot of the messages that we get is that those things keep us from being human or lovable, or, you know, no one will ever love me in this, you know, whatever, instead of realize we're all having, we all think those things at some point, and it's actually all have in common, doesn't make me any less able to connect. I just left that thinking, everything else aside, we are all so much more similar than we are different. You know, I don't want to do or say anything that makes us further apart. I would rather draw closer to you and learn more about you. And anything that you say that I haven't experienced, that's not a count against, well, I guess we can't be friends, you know?
Right, exactly.
That we don't have to have.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have to have the same stories. And when you have a hard one, you don't wish that on anyone else.
You're like, I'm happy you don't have to experience this, or you've never had to.
Exactly. Mm. So, yeah. And like, I don't know, I've changed my mind so much in the last 5-6 years. So I also like being in a position. If someone says, let me tell you how the world works, I just start backing away. It's like,
yes.
Grew up around that. If you think you have some tool or some belief or something that applies to everything and you have the answer for everything and you're the, you know, I'm just like, where's the curiosity? Where's the empathy? The openness to learn and change for the better. So I try to stay more in that space, and, you know, rather than, and not just shirk away from being competent and knowing what I really do know and what I care about matters. It's just that's not this super wide-ranging ruler that you hold up to everything. It's more about belonging and standing, and that's an internal thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And then it allows you to, I love Brene Brown. I haven't seen it in a minute, so I'm going to get it wrong, but it's like strong back or strong spine, soft front, wild heart or something like that. And I'm like, that's the stance that I want to have.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And I think that's so, I just love her too. But I do, I like the idea. And I know for like me personally, I can get very easily just hard everywhere. Like
yes.
Everything. Because I just, it will upset me or, mm-hmm. you know, it makes me angry still, or I'll feel bitter still about stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't serve me anything to be that way. And it's a learning process. And it doesn't mean that there aren't days that I still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely, like you said, having that soft front of mm-hmm. where you can accept other ideas. Like, and I've learned a lot in the last 3-ish years about that. And I came from like a high control based on Christianity, loosely, group. And so lots of judgment. Like, we judged everyone else was wrong, we were right. And so getting away from that was very important, that mindset. But it's still in there, you know. It's like a daily thing.
Yes.
Where it's like
this, like,
who cares what she's doing? Like, let her live her life.
Yeah. Yeah. So honestly, like, I'm writing again. I'm not sure.
Yay.
And like, I write songs and different things, but I'm working on what maybe another book that has to grow a lot bigger before it's a book. But and I don't know that it will have a life where it goes on and is published, but I need to do this work. It is trying to unpack that part, because one of the benefits, struggles, is there was, I don't want to use a word where it sounds comparative, but it was bad. It was bad. It was sexual abuse. It was, you know, things from my early childhood. And that was the first thing that I jumped into in therapy, right? And then a few years later, I just remember having a session with a different therapist. She was a sweet Christian lady. We weren't doing like biblical counseling, talking about faith. And there was this moment where I was like, oh my goodness, it feels in this moment like the sexual abuse wasn't even the worst part. The getting hit or the violence or the things that people are like, oh, that sounds so bad. Like, much more subtle. It's the way my brain is shaped by fundamentalist thinking, and that I can't see a God that doesn't look like my dad, and like just things like that, you know, and realize that feels worse, or it feels harder to heal, right? Harder to make sense of, because where do I start? Where do I go? What's like, you know? And so I'm still doing a lot of that work. And I think if someone was harmed using the words, the titles, the trappings of Christianity, like, good luck. We live in America. I live in Tennessee and there's a church every two blocks, you know, like,
Yeah.
Whether it's on our money and our politics and our, you know.
Yeah.
That's everywhere. And talk about triggers. And so, like, I can't just say, well, I'll just leave it behind me. It's all around me. And it's something that I have to face a lot more directly than I think I have yet. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you remove the fundamentalism from indoctrination like that? How do you get rid of the indoctrination? Because I'm not living the way I was raised. I'm not living like I'm told to be. And from the outside, it's like, well, you don't seem ruled by that anymore. It's like, no, it's in here.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
There's these parts that are preserving that. And it's strangely like, do I need to cut off my own arm? Like, what is this, me, or is this something that someone put into me? And we talk about, there's religious version of like, you shouldn't trust your flesh, you shouldn't trust your heart is wicked and everything. There's this idea of the Holy Spirit or conscience or like God speaking to you. And, you know, basically it's like, if my body was sometimes the best information giver, it was get out of here, run. And it's, but don't listen, you know, any voice or any feeling or thought that they don't like, that's Satan. And any message or thing that they want, that's God. And they're kind of in charge of telling you, which, you know, and just because my dad isn't here anymore in my daily life, it doesn't mean that the first 25 years of that shaped me and made me who I am aren't still manifesting every day.
Right. So. Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. Like once he might be in prison or whatever happens, you know, in anyone's situation, it doesn't take away what, like you said, what's in there. And I know I talk about this a lot, but like I have so many people that I've seen from the group that I came from and you get out and it's like, ta-da. But it's not over, you know, and it took me up until about 3 years ago to kind of really face that and realize, oh, what are all these? Why am I having all these issues and problems? And why does this keep coming up? And to realize how deep that indoctrination goes to where, and it's so interesting because I was just talking with my cousin, actually, and we kind of both of us grew up in the group, but we were more rebellious families, I would say. Like our parents were more chill, you know, we were that people. And so you think like, okay, our home lives were pretty good. Like they were, like my parents are great, like all that. But there's so much that you're still getting three times a week when you're with this group of people that does. And I mean, and obviously it does run into home life as well, but you know, when I try to take apart like that, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like my parents didn't beat me, you know, and I'll, yes, but, you know, there's always this other part that, and it's that mental part. And it's so interesting that you brought that up because I've interviewed a lot of different survivors from different cults and such. And I interviewed someone from the Children of God cult. And she was telling me that because it was all about sex, basically, and the sexual abuse was just awful. Mm-hmm. But she was saying, she's like, you know, everyone wants to focus on that and say like, oh my gosh, like this cult was all about sex and da 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 da. But she said, basically what you just said, she's like, not to say that it is okay or it's not hard to get past. But she said, like, I could heal from that. Where the mental abuse part of it, she said, it's so hard because it's in, you know, it's in our brain that can't, whatever, you know, it's got to be. And for years and years and years. So you're working on years of getting this out. So it's interesting when people bring that up, because she was, I think, the first one that ever said that to me. Mm-hmm. And it was really good to think about that way, because it doesn't dismiss the physical abuse at all. But I just find it interesting when other survivors bring that up, because I think and more it just rings true. Like, okay, mm-hmm. these people are dealing with a lot of different kinds of abuse, and this is the one uh-huh. that is, again, it's not worse or better or anything, but it's really hard to heal from.
Whatever may strike someone as the worst part, or let's just say, like, oh, that's the most sensational or extreme thing.
Yes.
And if you take that away, it's like, were there other things going on? Are there other layers to this? And it's like, yes, Dad could never been sexually abusive, and it would have been such a harmful, toxic environment. And that was the shocking thing for me, like a few years into therapy, and just go, well, and I think I knew it. It just, I finally felt the weight of that and was like, all rest of my life, this is going to be my work, you know? And there are certain things that I think we can't maybe get to right away. And to-do list is long enough that it's like, I you don't have that long to-do list that you know you can't get it done in one day. So you have to be okay with pacing it out, making a plan. And so as long as if someone comes to me and they go, I'm hurt by this, or you have this issue, or when are you going to address this? It's like, you know what? I am working as hard as I can. Like I'm always trying to be at my max. I can, whatever I can emotionally deal with, whatever I can, you know, psychologically handle, I want to be doing that work. Part of it is to advocate for my own safety and well-being. And, you know, it isn't anyone else's timetable other than mine. And, you know, if someone's working hard, you don't come up and go, why haven't you cleaned that side of the room yet? It's like, I'm getting to it. You know, there's a commitment. And at the end of the day, like, that's all that I can do. That's all that any of us can do, is be committing to our own work. And it's not going to look the same as everybody else. And you never know what's going to be particularly helpful. There's a lot of different therapeutic modalities that mm-hmm. I've tried yet. I'm going to get to it as soon as I
Yes.
And I particularly really like looking at, hey, what's something that's free, that's accessible, that I can do, and it's different, but like writing for me, it's so,
yeah.
And it's not going to be this one. It's not a, what's the word I'm looking for? Something phrase kind of like fix all. That's not the phrase I was looking for, but it's not a magic bullet. It doesn't do everything, but it never hurt. It's always help. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Musical expression, artistic expression. I'm stuck on that. You have like a door that you paint on with like.
Oh yeah. So, here, let me turn my computer so you can see. Like, that's my door.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that.
Isn't that fun? Oh, yeah, and then I have. Well, I don't know if you can see. I have like canvases everywhere. I know.
It's just like this beautiful tapestry or something. That's cool.
It's fun. And I'm not an artist at all, but for whatever reason, that release of through the brush, I'm like, just let me scribble, because it is amazing.
Wow. And I just think you never know. And I hold to that. I don't know if it's an actual quote or just the sentiment. I've seen it online, and I'm always like, yes, I needed that reminder that I trust that there's people that I haven't met yet that are going to love me, and I'm going to love them. We're going to be best friends. There's hobbies and art and places and things. There's so much brightness and beauty ahead. And I think of all the things I already treasure and value and love. And it's so exciting to think that doesn't have to be the totality of all of those good things. Like, there's more to explore and more to find. We've talked a lot about the heavier stuff. So, like, I just feel really grateful. I think you've been through something really, really hard where you thought you were going to die. And that could look different for everybody. And not everybody comes to that moment or moments. But when you really think, I probably won't survive this, and you do, I think it really changes everything. Or if you let it. And I think it gives you gratitude. I think it gives you courage. And any time from that point on, when you're looking at something going, that's impossible, or, you know, you hopefully have this knowing of like, that's what I thought that time.
But right.
There's more hope, too.
I love that perspective. Now, what about you briefly talked about your family earlier. Do you have a decent, good relationship with your siblings now?
Yeah, so I want the best for all of them. Our stories were so every family, naturally, your stories were intertwined. But ours being on TV and having this narrative about who we were, what we did, like, one of the best things is our narratives are not, like, we live our own lives. And I don't, that doesn't speak for me. And that's, just that is so much better. But I would say, generally speaking, without, you know, respecting that boundary, but also saying, you know, my mom was really supportive of me putting out my book. And I really appreciated that, appreciate that. And, you know, my family had the book about a year-ish before it came out. And so that just brought up a lot of stuff, a lot. They each have their own different stories. It's kind of funny. I feel like when I say this, like, our relationships are kind of the best. Everybody's doing the best they've ever been. That's just a and I think it remains to be seen. And, I hope that the most that anyone can hope for is that family can be a support and not a storm. And we all did a lot of things to survive. And as we were talking earlier, like, everybody's journey is not going to be the same. People are on just different roads than me. You know, I've just still keep doing music, you know, that it would associate with our family. Well, lots of people aren't doing that anymore. And I think that's fine. Like, no one should be weird when someone kind of pops up on the internet or is like, I really wish you'd be on your TV again. Like, no chance about the TV part. Or I wish you'd sing with your siblings. And it's like, you know, we're all so much better for the fact that we're not.
Yes. Yes.
Isn't the thing. And I think that always was artificial, right? Like, yes. That it actually wasn't. It's not that we weren't there in our human form singing together. Like, that was real. The minute that dad, forcing it, like, it just, yeah.
I remember one interview I saw on YouTube, and I don't know if it was the same one or a different one, but your dad, it was your mom, talking about, some are really blessed, like Jessica, and then so-and-so, we really had to work on teaching them to sing. And I'm like, no.
That can shock me, looking back, like, that's what the party line was. That's what we said. And, like, you know, all of us knew how to tell that story because people are just like, does everybody really want to be doing this? And it's like, oh, yeah, nobody has to. And it's like, yeah, you do. And, you know, oh, everybody loves it. Everybody has their different. We let people do all sorts of different things. It's like, there were plenty of people that wanted to go in other. And the other thing is, I was just talking with some of my younger siblings the other day, and I was like bringing up memories, and they were just kind of like, we don't ever remember living with you. And I was like,
oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, because you were three. And so there's 12 kids there's basically like five families.
Yeah.
Family, because there's the kids that grew up in Chicago before there was a band, before there was a this, and then there was money, and we moved, and there was that life. And then there was, that weird TV for 5 years. And then there was post everything breaking up and dad going to jail, and like, and so our experiences are radically, radically different.
Yes. And there's such a, there's such a huge rate. Like, how old is, you're the oldest, correct?
I'm 31. And okay. Sibling is 13. So, you know, It's radically different. I love them all, and I want them all to be happy and healthy. And, you know, I think that we all are going to be figuring out how to make do with what we have, like everyone does. And I think that understanding, like when I first landed in therapy, I got the shit scared out of me fast. Not that that was, but just like, hey, you are at risk for, it's like when you go to your physical and someone goes, I don't like those cholesterol levels, or I'm a specialist, I'm worried about that heart murmur or something. And it's like, at risk for, you know, toxic relationships, romantic relationships. And honestly, just the relationships part, whether it be family, romantic, whatever, I don't care how much money you make or how many houses you have, or there's a lot of success that you can have, that if you can't connect with other human beings or yourself well, that is going to harm you. And, you know, trauma, abuse, inter-family personal things, that's really hard to work on. The spiritual part, the psychological part, the mental part, like we've been saying, like, yeah, the risk factor for relationships, for health things, for depression, for addiction, you know, my background tells me I'm at risk for all these things, and I am committed to keep trying as much as possible to stay on, you know, on one side. This is, get out. I want to be on the side that's beating the odds and kicking those cycles and, you know, chilling things. Like, not all victims become perpetrators, but most perpetrators were victims. And so it's like, bring facts. And so when I look at even some of my younger siblings, I'm just like, I want to be truth telling and honest, and not scare them or any other survivor. I advocate so hard. Like, I'm like, every single survivor, whether I'm related to them or not. But being realistic about the challenges that will come, and just best, I'm trying to learn tools to, you know, not just help other survivors, but, you know, whether it be, how do I be a better support as a wife, as a sister, as a daughter? This is not pie in the sky or theoretical. It's very, very close to home for. So a lot of the advocacy and speaking work and stuff that I do, is some of the hardest stuff that I do, and the easiest is like always a yes. And it's a meaningful thing I think I can do with my time and my resources at this point. So,
yeah. Well, and I think it's so great that you take that mindset and you go at kind of that direction with it, because it is so valuable to other people. And I think about just your family alone, your siblings, you know, you being the oldest, and not like it's your job to make sure they turn out okay, but for them to just see you in the public eye kind of in a different way, and seeing you speaking, like you said, you want to be truthful. You don't want to like scare people, but the truth is the truth, and this is what it is. I think just your siblings alone, right? Like, if you could just help one of them with something that you say, well, amazing.
That's the thing, is all, you know, when I've come up to something and been like, this is going to be hard, or when I was, trying to wrap my head around, am I going to put this book out? And what would the harm of it? What would be the help of it? What would be the purpose? Is that worth it? Is that conceivable? Is that doable? And, you know, to know now that I'm not going to meet and talk to everybody that's read my book. That's just not going to happen. But it is extremely meaningful when someone says, because I can think of the books, the people, the quotes, the information that got me one closer to health or healing, or, you know, where today, still on my way. And to know that now I'm sometimes, just going to be that for somebody else, and feels purposeful. And how many people does it have to help to make it worth it? Just one. One would be purposeful. Because when I was in that dark spot, it's like, it didn't mean there wasn't a whole planet full of people with their needs and their wants, but that was my moment where it was like, I'm either not going to be here anymore, or this is all about to change. And I know that that is kind of happening all the time. I've talked to multiple people now that have said, you know, I recruited my dad after I read your book, and it's been really inspiring to meet a lot of people that are, you know, you having this podcast, you want space for these conversations to play a role in being part of that change and lifting up people's stories and getting them information that's encouraging or helpful. That's also very motivating. And I know that I'm not the only, you know, it's not just, I'm not the only one who went through the hard things. I'm also not the only person working on this problem. So there's, you may not be surrounded every day by other advocates and survivors, but then I think the internet can be a weird place. But when you, it's funny, you know, because of social media, I would have seen
right.
Stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Like, exactly.
Connecting because of that. So whatever
right.
More strange yeah. Things there are, I'm really grateful for the connecting space and
yes.
It's a living tool for trying to make that change, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting that, I think even just like I was saying, the last 3 years, kind of the connections I've made
mm-hmm.
and whether it be in being on podcast or just, you know, connecting online or whatever, but it is, there's a lot of people out there. And I think as I'm seeing this kind of community grow, it's awesome because I talked to Brielle Deckler. She's, let's see, Warren Jeffs, I think like his 17th wife or something, and she's awesome. And she's advocating. She works at like a resource for women getting out from underneath that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's fantastic. But what was my point? Talking to her. Oh, I know what she had said is she had kind of like said, because the place she works at is like Christian based. So okay. She's like, oh, I'd really like to, you know, for now I have to have my nonprofit under them because I need blah, 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 blah. But I really want to get out from the Christianity part of it.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, here's the thing. That's great. Like whatever you want to do is what you want to do. But I'm like, while you're doing what you're doing, this is so impactful for people. It doesn't matter if it's still Christianity based or whatever. The women you're working with that are coming out from these situations, you're where they need you right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, don't devalue, I guess, what you're doing because you're doing great, you know?
So the way that I think about that is that everybody, just like we don't need to compare our hurt, we don't need to compare, well, who's being most impactful with their help, because we just need more of it. We need more people. We need everything from people who are just, they open their homes and they're a safe place. They don't have to be, you know, expert. We obviously need really good professionals and therapists and experts, and we need much more research about neuroscience and psychology and like studies about trauma. Like we need all of it. We need Brene Brown. We need people like Sarah Edmondson. We need, what are your skills? You like with people and you got a mic, maybe your podcast. You like to, if someone ever look at you, but you can write, use that, you know, and people. When you get into the advocacy space, you know, there's a lot of charities, there's fundraising. You might be a small business owner in an affluent part of town. What can you do with the fund? You know, when you realize $1,000, $5, $100, what can that do for children at your local CAC, Child Advocacy Center? And it's where children who are sexually abused are interviewed, and they can get, you know, forensically interviewed, but then given support, and they try to do things in the least traumatic way to start providing immediate support to children. And it's just like, okay, well, there's almost like no better cause. Again, not comparatively. It's just like when you realize the numbers in your own community. Legislation, guess what? Work for you to do. You're just with kids, and you know, and it's like there's prevention, there's skill, you know, these things. So I just love telling people there's so much work to do and there's something special and or unique that you don't have to go do anything. You don't have to go be anybody different than who you are. There's something to offer here. It's going to be to really the needle. And there's just so many different roles to play. And it's a beautiful thing. We all need each other.
Right. And I think just like what you were saying, where there's all these different avenues, whether it's writing or a podcast or, you know, advocating in whatever way, there's also so many different ways of receiving that. And so I think, you know, someone might just listen to podcasts all day long while they drive around for work. And that's what reaches them, or listening to a book, where, you know, someone else might need a different form, you know, of advocacy, or might just connect different with a different personality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like the more of us that are talking about it, the better, because someone's going to connect with us differently.
Yeah. And there are seasons too.
Right. You know, yeah.
Our life kind of speak to us in, I don't have the time to go do this right now, or I don't, you know, maybe one day I'll be in that place to do that. But yeah, there's always something that is gonna fit or suit you even at any given time, I think.
Right. Yeah.
So that's something that I just try to still stay open to, and it's, you know, it's so inspiring.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you're very inspiring. You're so, so talented. And you know what? I am so glad. I wanted to be sure and say this. And you had mentioned that some of your siblings have not stuck with music. And I could see why. You know, I'm sure that there are times that could be very traumatic or whatever. Or they just didn't like it and were forced to do it all those years. But I am so glad that you still share your music with the world. Because you are so talented. And like I said, I was sitting here, listening to your book, sobbing. Turn your music on, sobbing more. I'm just like knowing your story and then listening to your music. Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, everyone has to go listen to your music and read your book. I'm so glad that you keep doing what you're doing, because it is, I think it's very valuable. And I love your music.
That's
so talented. So talented.
Take it. Thank you. And I'll tell you what, like, I'm going to make music, as in write and compose, like, till the day I die, hopefully. Whether and how exactly doing it as a career or business is very strange. It's not very intuitive to me, because I have things I'd like to do. I'd love to have more resources to share with people and advocate and, you know, finance things. And so there's a drive to kind of be successful and accomplish things and to take something, you know, what if what you were painting on your door, now all of a sudden you're trying to like market and sell, and it's just like, but this is my soul. Like, this is my
heart. Right.
It's my work that I do. And it can be weird. And so I think I wear a lot of different hats. But yeah, probably like, my audiobook has been the most, you know, because I was telling my story. It was what I had written, and it was music that I had written about some of those things. And that was really, you know, there's been a lot of moments now where it's a little bit like, okay, if I don't ever do anything else in life, like that seemed really cool, or that was really like a big goal. And I'm also now sitting with, well, last year I wrote, you know, released a book, released an album. I'm done this year, you know, and I'm like,
you're right.
Okay, I don't have to do every
right.
Not the new standard that I have to do for the rest of my life.
I was just thinking of like so many people that came from my group. And I think your being in the public light before all this, like with your family and all of that. But I think because of your dad's stance on his beliefs, I think you can put people up on a pedestal where I'm sure you guys were for a while in so many people's minds. And like, what a great dad, you know, leading his family, godly, you know, leader, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then here's the truth.
Yeah.
And I think so valuable for so many people that come from that kind of religious situation to see like, because I know there's stuff that went on within our group that was never, ever reported. And so just giving that freedom to people to kind of like see your story and say, oh, hmm.
Yeah. You know. It's wild because I've heard such a range of some people, you know, I don't think the internet is the, if someone's commenting, this isn't an actual poll or a study or anything like that. So, you know, some people are just, I never liked your dad. I always knew, right? And they're saying that after the fact, you know, if they were saying that to their partner as they watched, you know, I wasn't there to hear that or not, but they maintain, you know, I always knew. And then there's other people, yeah, that just, I thought you guys were the best thing ever. And, like, we wanted to be you. And so I've heard quite a range. And, you know, there's people who are just like, wow, that's so different than my life. How interesting. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm not mindlessly watching, but it's not about, oh, this is how I also believe. This is how I'm trying to live. So that there's a difference there. And what was weird is how many oldest girls from large Christian families, we have the same stories. And it's just appalling.
Mm.
Absolutely appalling. And it doesn't, like, sexual abuse happens wherever there's humans. It happens in schools and coaches, and, you know, everywhere. When it happens in, like, a fundamentalist, conservative, family, religious environment, there are very specific markers and ways. If we're looking at how does abuse happen in Hollywood with actors, you know, oh, it's this power dynamic, and it's when these sorts of situations are the norm. So, like, here's how we would need to change it. And, you know, people, we get that, right? We see a pattern here. What would be effective in changing it? And I think in the religious, familial, spiritual, you know, in that there are very clear, like, this is what abusers are using to gain their power. This is the dynamic that takes place. This is that, to some degree, it doesn't mean, you know, I think there's so much work to be done, as I was saying earlier, but a big part of what I can do speaks to the specifics of this environment. Like, I didn't experience of, you know, being in high school and then my first boyfriend, you know, like, that's a different experience than I have. I don't want to mention it and not be able to remember her name, but is it Michelle? Know My Name, Michelle Miller, maybe? She wrote, maybe that's not her name. She wrote about her experience. She was raped at Stanford, I believe. And she had gone anonymous for a while through the prosecution, the trial, everything. And, you know, her story is very different than mine. I so appreciated her being willing to articulate her experience and sharing. And I was able to learn a lot, and the ways that we have experienced or struggled with some of the same things, you know, that's helpful here and now. But I wouldn't otherwise know a lot of the things that she shared and talked about. So, you know, I think it still remains to be seen how much should I and will I lean into just kind of systematically looking at these environments, because it is, it's weird when you're walking around and you're like, some people aren't even aware this is happening. And I feel like the canary in the coal mine, like, hello, alert. Awareness needs to be raised. And then you have the difficult challenge of, well, how do you articulate this? And what do you propose to do? And what seems to be the pattern here? So, to that point, you know, that's very much in the forefront of my mind these days, and understanding, seeing other people come forward and saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people aren't going to be in a position where it's going to be safe for them to share their story. I think that's important to remember. And so there is this, like, with the privilege kind of comes this responsibility of, like, it's never going to be easier. Like, it really does speak to, hey, this is kind of a calling, like something that I should do for myself, and I can't really speak for others. There's just so many other people that won't be able to step into this role, and just the surviving part, the living, like, that's a victory, and no more is required of you. You know, you don't, you go out and become this you know, I think we want to be careful that we're not, you know, well, the ideal survivor is who is going to be able to tell their story and be up on stage. And then, you know, like, you don't have, there's work that can be done without that element being brought.
Everyone needs to go listen or read your book because it was fabulous.
Yeah. Thank you so much for just sharing your platform and your way with me. And for reaching out, I want to do more of that myself in my life and just reaching out and connecting with people. And because I rarely do I ever regret it. You know, there's just beautiful that comes and Well, thank you so much. See you next week.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. I'll bring my coffee and we'll be good to go.
Sounds good. Well,
thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shanty Pants Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires, at shantypantsshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there. All the things. All the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.